The Guardian.
Today, 2K12 ahoy! Boxing Day blowout in Premier League, annual appearance of Jolly Man in Red and White, Dimitar Berbatov, thrills Old Trafford as United catch City on top of table. Meanwhile, with Chelsea drawing and Arsenal dunces with Wolves, Spurs are the top London team. Woof. But what awaits on New Year's Eve, apart from a vague sense of letdown around about midnight? That and much, much more up for discussion in today's last for 2011 Football Weekly Extra. Hello there, everybody. Last pod of 2011, and it's a special one with Barry Glendenning, Sean Ingle, and Michael Cox. Hi. Happy Christmas, where that's appropriate, and just kind of festive thing. Sean, I know your beliefs don't include the eating of Christmas dinner, per se.
I had dinner. It wasn't just a good old-fashioned nut roast. Rather than
just a good old-fashioned. There's nothing good nor old-fashioned about a nut roast. I put it to you, Sean Ingle. What other Christmas treats were banned at the Ingle household?
That was about it.
Really?
Although, actually, the wife did ban tinsel. And coming from Luton, I used to love tinsels and really bad decorations. That's what we did.
But that's all you had?
That's all I had. But the wife banned tinsels.
Why?
Because she said it was really naff.
Tinsel is naff?
Yeah, she was.
Right. So she looked at her household and her life, and she thought, that's what's got to go. Yeah. Right. Okay. Just checking. You had a good Christmas, didn't you, Barry?
I did, yeah.
Yep. Okay. Saw lots of football.
I was at home in Ireland, and the usual sort of drink-sodden Irish Christmas, and now I'm back. I don't really know what day of the week it is or anything.
It's
Thursday, I believe.
That's correct. And Michael Cox, you have a good time off?
It was good. A little bit of time off. Actually, on Christmas evening, I was in a pub and bumped into an old friend who I hadn't seen for a while, who was a Football Weekly listener.
No.
And he named his favourite two panellists as Sean and Barry.
Is that so?
So it's quite appropriate that we three should be here today.
Why you, if you're not
his favourite? Yeah, or me.
Because he's my friend.
I'm the odd man out there, then.
Wow. Well, you're not an option. You're always this.
I'm not an option. There you go. All right, okay.
But you've been on Channel 5 this week.
That's true, Barry.
With men on steroids, allegedly.
They're not on
pushing
steroids, Barry.
Boulders around.
Pushing the limits
campus.
Of the human physique.
Is there going to be dwarf tossing in the final with you playing the part of the dwarf?
Sure. Right, let's get on to the Barclays Premier League. Hey, Man City, 2 weeks ago, they were 5 points clear with an absolutely huge goal difference. It was, 17 better than Man United's puny goal difference. And now they're level, and it's only five, that goal difference margin. That goal difference difference, as I like to call it. What's happened?
Well, I think United have had a couple of easy games. Fulham didn't play very well tactically. Wigan had a man sent off quite early on. And I think, yes.
No, you say easy games, but weren't those the exact same two teams that Chelsea could only draw with?
Yeah, true. Fair point.
Come with the king, you best not miss.
But at the same time, I think City, I thought they were very unlucky against Chelsea. They should have won a lap, should have had a penalty, probably would have put them 2-0 up. And actually, watching the highlights game against West Brom, they dominated, they just couldn't score. So I think I would still fancy City quite strongly. They're almost even money at the moment. I think the key point for me is that United have only played two of the top eight away. They drawn against Stoke and Liverpool, haven't played any of the other teams, and they've got a real tough run starting on January 22nd.
Where they play
Arsenal away, then Stoke at home, then Chelsea away, then Liverpool at home. And I think for me, City, because of the strength of their squad, are still the team to beat.
Okay, City though, the results and goals have dried up a little bit of late. Is it, as Mancini was suggesting, problems with teams that park the bus, or is that a bit simplistic, Michael?
Maybe. I think David Silva's form is dipped a little bit, certainly not to the point where he's been poor, but he's gone from being excellent and playing very well every week to maybe dipping a little bit in the classic style you might expect of a player like that who isn't used to football at this time of year, although obviously it is his second season. But they played a really attacking team against West Brom, almost the most attacking team they could play, and they still couldn't find a way through, which was very, very surprising. I think maybe they do need a bit of a break, and the problem for them is that they've got two games within the space of 3 days at the turn of the year, which Mancini is very unhappy about. So he's going to have to rotate. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them drop more points against Liverpool, because a difference of 2 days' rest is a big factor.
What about when they visit Sunderland, hey?
Sunderland in crisis after the comedy penalty that Howard Webb bestowed on
Leon Osman.
Everton. Yeah. Leighton Baines did have the good grace to look slightly embarrassed before dispatching it, but yeah, that was a remarkable referee.
Well, there were some very strange decisions over the kind of Boxing Day and beyond Christmas fixtures. Sorry, Michael.
No, just on that Sunderland game, thinking about it, Mancini will probably want his best side out for the Liverpool game, so maybe he'll rest a lot of players away at Sunderland, and maybe that could be a game where they could slip up.
Mm-hmm. I was a bit surprised with Mancini. I mean, he's got a point that you know, it's a little bit unfair. They've only got two days rest, but at the same time they have a huge squad. They have spent millions. I mean, you know, the likes of Wigan might complain that, you know, I'd rather like some of, you know, Mancini's second string,
and they might.
You know, I think it's I mean, if I was Mancini, I'd say, yeah, it's a little bit tough, but yeah, we've got the squad. You know, we want to win the league. You know, we're just going to go and do it. I thought it was a little bit whiny.
If only you were, Sean. If only
that'd
you
be
were.
Great, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Sunderland have lost 5 of their 6 games against teams in the top 7.
Oh,
but it's,
that was before Martin O'Neill.
Yes,
though.
That was a sort of Bruce era. Yeah. So yeah, it's a hard one to call. I mean, you would expect City to win, but I wouldn't be entirely confident they will.
All right. Well, quick word on United there, Man United. In some ways, this was the period they were meant to be at their more vulnerable, no? I mean, so injury ravaged, to borrow a Gary Cook expression, that they had to play Carrick at centre half and Valencia at fullback. And yet, here they come away with 10 unanswered goals, 2 5-0 wins in a row. Woof. And featuring the return of Dimitar Berbatov. How delighted am I to see this fellow back? Great stats yesterday. He's scored 19 goals in the last 13 months. All but 4 of them have been at home, and all of them have been against lower sides, and, you know, teams lower in the table. That's the one. And, hey, look what's up next for Man United and Berbatov. Blackburn at Old Trafford, the game where he scored 5 last year.
Yeah, and to be fair to him with those stats, he doesn't really get a chance against the big sides, does he? Mm. So he can't really score against them.
That's very true. Very,
back in
very
your
true.
Box, Richards.
Yeah. All right, will he get a chance against Blackburn then?
Oh, you'd think so, coming off the back of a hat-trick and, as you say, 5 last year, and United possibly wanting to rest a couple of players. I think he should get a go, yeah.
There you've got the two Manchester teams, but how far is it from Manchester to London? You look down the table, off to City and United, then you've got the London trio. Spurs, which side of the title chances still on line are they? Are they still in the hunt?
I think they are just about. I mean, they're 7 points off lead. They've got a game in hand against Everton. What's impressed me this season is they've been their away form. Spurs typically haven't been that impressive against sides from the bottom half of the table away from home, certainly the last 2 or 3 years. But this season they've been excellent. I thought they absolutely dominated against Norwich. Be interesting to see how they go on against Swansea this weekend, because it's another game that you would think, if they want to be title contenders, they have to win. I'm really impressed with Spurs. I think their midfield is at least as good as anything else in the Premier League, possibly even as good as City's. And if they can keep Modric, Bale, and Adebayor fit, they've got a chance. But I think they can go close, but it might be like West Ham in 85-86, where they're still in the running for longer than we all think, but they're not quite good enough to win the league.
Mm.
But 20-1, it's, you know, not a bad price.
Is that what they are, 20-1? It does seem unlikely, and yet, as you say, 7 points, but with that game at home to Everton in hand, and they look terrific. Gareth Bale, described as unstoppable by Harry Redknapp. He had one of those games, didn't he, which he produces from time to time. Why doesn't he always do that? Or was it just Norwich playing into Spurs' hands?
Well, Norwich are very narrow. They play a diamond in midfield, so they are a little bit prone to width. But it was interesting that Redknapp said after the game he told Bale and Van der Vaart they could play where they wanted. Hmm. It worked quite well, didn't it?
Didn't tell Modric he could play where he wanted. He'd be at Stamford Bridge by now. Yeah. Anyway, but so that was the thing. Was it? I mean, do you think he plays up a little bit that I don't know?
Oh,
about
yeah,
tactics?
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. When you listen to his interviews after games sometimes, particularly last year at the Emirates when they 2-0 down at half time, came back to win 3-2. And what he said afterwards was entirely tactical. He was talking about narrowing it up, the fact that he was had a numerical disadvantage in the middle. He wanted, I think, more height up front, want more pace up front. He is quite a tactical manager. I mean, I don't think that his starting selections are always that intelligent, but he's very good at changing the game halfway through at half-time. Against Stoke a couple of weeks ago, Spurs were 2-0 down at half-time. They still lost 2-1, but they were much, much better in the second half when they went to back three and wing-backs.
But are they really that freewheeling, or is that just a kind of an illusion? I mean, Gareth Bale, for example, does he have a position in the team?
Well, he's certainly become much more varied in his positioning. Last year, he was always hugging the left flank. But I think we saw in this game that he can be a real threat through the centre because defenders don't seem to be used to it when you have a player, basically a winger, who runs straight through the centre. We don't really have many players like that in the Premier League. The central midfield is generally just, you know, a like Modric, distribute the ball out wide and do it very well. But that sudden burst of pace seemed to catch Norwich by surprise.
All right, well, they still have tough games away. To Manchester City, Liverpool, Arsenal and Chelsea. So that form on the road is key for Spurs. But
I mean, what's interesting, I think, you know, we always used to sort of go on about Spurs' record away against the big four, but last season they beat Arsenal and Liverpool away at the back end of last season, so you wonder whether they might have sort of broken that hoodoo.
Right, what do you think of their chances at the Liberty Stadium on what I think is New Year's Eve?
Well, Swansea have a great record at home.
Do they? They drew at QPR, then.
Yeah, no, but they've only lost once against United. They draw a lot of games, but
they don't concede many, but they don't score many either. And I think they've only conceded 3 goals in 9 home games. So that will test Spurs' mettle, but it should be an excellent game, actually, because just two nice, attractive teams playing good football.
All right, then.
I think Swansea have only won 1 of the last 7, though, so I think off the top of my head, so it might be, you know, Spurs, I think we'll go there expecting to win.
All right. Well, that is it for part one of today's show. Coming up in a second or two, we'll be debating the massive number of draws in the last round of Premier League matches and whose was the most disappointing. Hey, 10 games between Boxing Day and the day after Boxing Day. 7 of them were draws, 5 of them were 1-1. What does it mean? And which draw was the most disappointing? Was it Arsenal against 10-man Wolves?
Yeah, probably, because they had so much of the ball and they had so many goal-scoring opportunities. I almost don't think Liverpool can be too disappointed with the draw at home against weak opposition now because they're so used to it. They dominate every game, they have more chances. Someone told me the other day that with the exception of one game, every time Liverpool have drawn at home, the opposition goalkeeper has been man of the match, which sums up how much they're dominating and not getting through.
Well, the three big clubs who could only manage draws against unfancied opposition, there were great goalkeeping performances in each one. Wayne Hennessy for Wolves, David Stockdale for Fulham at Chelsea, and this Bun fellow who's on a roll. Yep. He's their current keeper. Yeah, he was brilliant. Should we come on to that in a second? Do you want to talk a little bit more about Arsenal? The ridiculous red card for Milius? Mick McCarthy's quote, as long as there's a hole in my bum, that wasn't a sending off.
Did he say bum?
He said, as long as there is a hole in my bum, that was never a sending off.
I would have
off.
Thought he'd be more of a, as long as there's a hole in my arse.
Maybe it's tidied been up. Yeah, I think it's been tidied up.
I'd be very surprised.
Yeah, all right then.
But, you know, I could be doing Mick a grave injustice.
Right.
Wayne Hennessy's, like, you say 10-man Wolves and they're sending off as unjust, but Wayne Hennessy, it was like they had 3 goalkeepers.
Yeah.
His performance was remarkable. And it's just one of those games you see from keepers sometimes where they sort of turn into an octopus and just stop everything. You're looking at me like I'm insane.
No, I'm just lapping up this.
But Wayne Hennessy doesn't really look like an athlete, does he? You know?
No, it's funny, you know, because
looks like some fella who's just been.
She said he doesn't belong in a football match.
He looks like he's sort of been summoned off a bar stool or something here.
He's fresh faced and blonde, and he doesn't look dirty enough or grisly enough.
Quite neuromantic.
Yeah, that was exactly what we were thinking. In what way? Like he should be behind a synth with a pair of flared. Yeah. I mean, I say flared at the top, you know, those kind of, what were they called? Parachute? No, what were they called? Anyway, right, okay. So, rewinding just a bit. Watching that Arsenal performance against the Hennessy, did you think, ooh, if only they had Thierry Henry out there, I bet that would sort things out. And will they soon, the Gunners?
Don't know. I mean, the Daily Mail is suggesting today that he will sign. It would surprise me, but
Mertesacker said, you know, he's given it the thumbs up. Yeah. He said he's playing against him in training. He's got good quality. Yeah?
Yeah, well, to be frank, you can't be much worse than Shemak and Arshavin. Both of them have been really poor recently. I think people might be a little bit surprised how much Henry has declined in the last couple of years.
Really?
And it's not just his pace. I mean, particularly in his last season at Barcelona, where Guardiola just barely used him in the second half of the season and was playing Jeffren, this 24-year-old winger, who I don't think has played for the team since, showed how far he'd fallen in Guardiola's eyes. And it would be, I think it would be a bit of a shame, because he's clearly not the player he was when he left. And he's just had this statue unveiled. He returned in the summer for the Emirates Cup and had a bit of a farewell. I think he might ruin his legacy slightly.
All right. Well, speaking of great ball handlers, then, what about the man between the posts for Fulham in the game at Chelsea there? And what does that mean for Andre Villas-Boas? Three draws in a row, just like they did last year when things began to really unravel for Ancelotti.
I mean, the papers haven't really gone to town on Villas-Boas, even though, you know, Chelsea got a very poor record. I think that's probably because the briefings from the club, you know, will be telling these reporters, look, you know, we're sticking with them for the long term. And that wasn't the case with Ancelotti. There were certainly noises coming from Chelsea about this time last year saying he was off. At the same time, I mean, I think you've got to give Villas-Boas a little bit of a few months to get things right. But at the same time, they are struggling, and 34 points from 18 games isn't good enough.
It was an interesting performance. A lot of people are mentioning Ashley Cole and his sudden decline, almost certainly in at fault for the Fulham goal. No,
he was. I mean, I wouldn't call it. I mean, players have peaks and you know, and dips throughout a season. I wouldn't necessarily call you know, Cole in decline, but certainly hasn't had as good a season as he's had the last two or three.
What about Fulham then, going to Stamford Bridge without Andy Johnson and Bobby Zamora officially because they were both injured? Is that was that actually the reason, or did
I definitely got the whiff of rodent about that when I saw that they were both injured, inverted commas. I have my doubts, but I'm only guessing. So my ill-informed punditry on Football Weekly. Shocker.
No, but no less reliable for all that. But, you know, they went there to Stamford Bridge. They could have had the win if Orlando Sarr had been a bit more on target with his chance.
Absolutely.
But, Michael, a couple of weeks ago, the introduction of Oriol Romeu into the midfield was supposed to herald a new Chelsea era and, you know, the dawning of the real Villas-Boas Chelsea, and they beat Man City, and that was all terrific. So what's gone wrong since?
Well, they didn't play Romeu against Tottenham, which was a slightly strange. This is the game before, but it seems strange that Romeu came in and played so well, and then Mikel returned. I mean, Mikel, I thought, did a decent job a couple of seasons ago, but the last 18 months or so, he doesn't really seem to contribute much. Interesting on Romeu, there's rumours that Barcelona do have some kind of buyback clause, and they could activate it in January, which I think is highly unlikely because they've got Busquets and they've got Mascherano and a couple of other players in that role. But if they do have that buyback clause, you wouldn't be surprised to see them get him back because he does look a very composed player at such a young age. Or he's actually not that young, is he? But so inexperienced, I should say.
It's one of many players you read about potentially leaving Stamford Bridge. No, Malouda says he wants to head off to PSG. Anelka and Alex now out of the squad. Tumpty tumpty dum, Drogba, etc. Shanghai, Shenhui, etc. Well, I'm just saying. Doesn't seem a very happy camp, perhaps. I don't know.
Is Villas-Boas likely to get the bullet?
No, Sean says he isn't. I think all indications are he's not.
But it's very hard to sort of second guess Abramovich and the fact that he never says anything, but I wouldn't imagine he's particularly content at the moment.
Well, the other thing is, of course, Chelsea were briefing that they were going to get Hiddink until sort of, you know, 3 or 4 days before Villas-Boas turned up, you know, because Abramovich was bored of waiting for Hiddink and then changed his mind. So you never know. But I think they will give Villas-Boas time. I think clearly there's a rebuilding job to be done there. But you know, you could look back. Arguably, they should have beaten Spurs the way they played second half. They beat City. I thought they were a bit lucky, but they beat City. You could argue again they came on strong second half. So it's not all doom and gloom.
But you could
them.
See them finishing outside the top four.
Yeah, you can,
couldn't you?
Yeah,
and that would be interesting, wouldn't it? Sorry, Michael.
Just two quick points. First, to say that in the last 10 minutes of games, they haven't picked up the points they should have done. And in fact, they've probably lost more points than they have picked up. Later on, they lost against Arsenal. Later on, they lost against Liverpool. And, you know, we always talk about the sign of a good side, but classic Manchester United was always getting results late on and Chelsea doing the opposite. And the second thing is, you wonder how much age is a factor with likes of Drogba and Malouda supposedly on the way out, not just because they're near the end of their careers, but because Villas-Boas is so young himself. You wonder whether the players do find it difficult to be instructed by a man who is pretty much their age and whether Villas-Boas would prefer to work with players who are 10, 12 years younger than him.
Do you think it's his age or the fact that he wasn't a player that would bother the dressing room most?
Well, Mourinho wasn't a player, so I would expect possibly the age thing. I don't think it should be an issue, but there's, you know, there's some big characters in that dressing room who perhaps don't take kindly to being bossed around. I remember when he took over, there was a story that, you know, when Villas Boas used to be the man in terms of giving each player's instructions, some of the players just kind of threw the little documents away that he gave them.
Ooh.
I'm not sure if that's true or not, but if it is, it's quite difficult to then go to a situation where there's trust between a manager and a player.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Kenny Dalglish, significantly older than his charges at Anfield, and yet the results really not coming at the moment for Liverpool. We mentioned the fact that they drew at home to bottom of the table Blackburn after gifting Blackburn, to be fair, the goal with the Charlie Adam own goal. But is it Mark Bunn? What's his name? Michael? Mark Bunn.
Mark Bunn,
what a fantastic performance. Presumably, will he now be the first choice keeper? Because, you know, Paul Robinson, to be fair, when was the last time he had a game like that?
He's had a pretty poor season, Robinson, actually. I mean, you look at his save-to-shot ratio, I think it's the lowest in the league, or one of the lowest in the league. And he's also really weak from long-range shots, Robinson. There was a period 2 weeks ago when I think five goals in a row he conceded were all from distance.
That's why Spurs, one of the reasons Spurs got rid of him, they upped the stats, sort of, and the stats showed, actually, that was the case back at Spurs.
Amazingly, actually, Wayne Hennessy of Wolves, who we were traducing earlier, he's made the most saves in the Premier League this season with 90, and the next most is Brad Friedel with 71.
Wow, it's quite a difference, isn't it?
And Paul Robinson does not feature in the top 10.
No, he doesn't. What about Liverpool now and the fact, well, they've got Newcastle coming up, we're going to talk more about that in a second, but in the meantime, more bad news for Luis Suarez, who now picks up an extra one-game ban for this Friday's game against the Magpies for that naughty one-fingered salute he gave the Fulham fans back on December the 5th. So that's a total of 9 games he could be out for. The 8-game suspension due to start, I think, on January the 4th, although the indications are that Liverpool are still going to appeal, etc. But this is a club with the worst shots-to-goal percentage in the entire Premier League. And he's the only player there who scored more than 2 goals this season. Luckily, though, Sean, they've got a £35 million striker standing by to take over, because otherwise it would be disaster.
Well, Andy Carroll's got, I think he's only scored twice in 16 games for Liverpool. He's only had 9 starts. I guess with Suarez being out, Liverpool might start playing to his strengths. They might put more crosses into the box. They might play a little bit more directly.
Is that what the problem's been for Carroll?
I think partly. I think also you've got to say his refuelling habits. And Barry and I had a frank exchange of views a few months ago on the pod, and Barry was sticking up for Carroll.
The point I was making was that he was getting a lot of grief for his drinking habits from people who don't know anything about his drinking habits. I've never seen Andy Carroll in a pub.
Statistically, that'd be quite likely if he went to it.
Pardon?
You know, it's statistically likely you would have bumped into him.
I probably would, yeah. I probably spend a little more time than I should in public houses.
Right.
And
hasn't affected you?
Not at all.
Not at all. So, all right, but Carroll, this thing, okay, Carroll's going to come in, he'll have a run in the team, but this could be disastrous for Liverpool's season. Suarez is the man whose performances, not just goals, but performances have made them a threat so far, I think I'm right in saying, by and large, although Maxi's done a bit, and there's probably all sorts of other players as well that you'd like to nominate. But him going out and Carroll coming in, is this not going to be a total collapse of their season?
Well, you could argue that Gerrard comes back, and Gerrard, according to Dalglish, is, you know, fitter than he's been for years, and perhaps they might switch Bellamy to a more central role, possibly.
Right.
I think disaster's too strong a word. I mean, clearly it's a blow to their season, but disaster's too strong a word.
All right.
Just thinking about that 9-game ban, if Liverpool were to draw in the FA Cup and get a replay, plus have their Carling Cup semi-final, that'd be 4 games of the 9. So it'd only be 5 Premier League games.
Right. So they should play for a replay in the FA Cup.
Well, it would help in that sense.
Yeah, it certainly would.
I mean,
they're certainly drawing lots of games anyway, so there's a very good chance of it. What, in your opinion, would be par for Liverpool supporters? Like, I mean, they've had a lot of off-field distractions, but I'm not quite sure what do Liverpool supporters expect of their team this season. Would, like, 4th place be satisfactory? And it seems unlikely they'll finish fourth.
I think sixth is probably as good as they're going to get, let's be honest. And, I mean, Newcastle is going to be interesting when they play on Friday. I mean, they're only a point behind in the league. Liverpool were crazy prices. They were sort of like, you know, 1-2 on, which, given the fact they've drawn against Swansea, Sunderland, Blackburn, Norwich at home, as well as the two Manchester clubs, you wouldn't be throwing a lot on Liverpool to win against Newcastle.
Mm.
But you put all your money on the woodwork being hit a lot, because they're the two teams that have hit the post or the crossbar the most. Liverpool 17 times and Newcastle 12.
Well, you're full of these texts today, aren't you?
I'm just plucking them out of thin air.
That's
and
amazing.
not consulting page 5 of today's Guardian sports section at all.
All right, okay. Newcastle got their first win in 7 games against Bolton, who once again failed to get back-to-back results. Oh, Bolton have got a big game coming up. They're playing Wolves. I might have mentioned that back at the start. We'll come on to some of that type thing and more Premier League and a bit of SPL and more in part 3. But right now, that's the end of part 2. Now, excitingly enough, joining us on the line from Scotland is Ewan Murray. Hi, hey, Ewan.
How are you?
I'm very well, Ewan. Yourself?
Fine, thank you.
Excellent. Late night last night?
Just the usual adrenaline rush. Everyone behaved themselves pretty much, so it was an old firm game where we could concentrate on football, which is always always pleasant.
Yes. Unusually, Barry was just pointing out, it's very unusual that an old firm game is played at night. Usually they're kind of 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, the strange thing about that is that the police actually always insist that they would rather it was at night. They say it's more peaceful at night, I think, on the basis that people have been at work all day and there's less of a window after the game for trouble. Obviously, given the time of year, you would call that into question, but the police themselves obviously okay these fixtures, and the police themselves have insisted that they would rather that the games took place at night.
All right. Well, it all went off peacefully enough. A 1-0 win for Celtic, that's 9 straight wins, and a team that looked, well out of the picture in terms of the title race, 15 points behind less than 2 months ago, now ahead in the SPL.
Yeah, I think, there's been a 17-point swing, I think, since the 5th of November, which is obviously quite an achievement on Celtic's part. And Rangers they just seem to have lost the knack, a useful knack that took them to 3 championships, which is, when not playing well, still winning games. And last night, actually, Rangers played okay, particularly in the first half. You could argue that they were the better team in the first half. So I think last night they played better than certainly myself and a lot of others anticipated they would, but Celtic have got the momentum now and they've overhauled Rangers, and that for Neil Lennon and Celtic is a big thing. The test now is whether they can do something different and something that's a challenge in itself, which is lead from the front and see out this lead that they've got.
But Rangers should have had a goal in the first half, shouldn't they, Ewan?
Yeah, I thought it was a goal, yeah. I mean, I think some people are still debating it, but it looked over the line to me. In defence of the assistant referee, you know, it was an almost impossible one, I think, for him to see, because the Celtic goalkeeper, Fraser Forster, his body was between the assistant referee and the ball, so I don't know genuinely how he could see that, and it comes back to the debate about goal line technology, which would have cleared that one up. But to be fair to the Rangers manager, Ali McCoys, he didn't dwell on it after the game. He said, that's life. You move on, but I felt it was a goal, and if Rangers had gone ahead after 7 minutes, as that was, it could have changed the complexion of the game completely.
Heading into 2012, what's the situation meanwhile off-field for Rangers with their various issues with the Inland Revenue, etc.?
Yeah, just as they were, really, James, to be honest. We're still waiting for the big tax case, as it were, to be resolved between HMRC and Rangers, which could cost the club £49 million potentially. That keeps being put off. That hasn't been heard. The fascinating thing is going to be this January transfer window for Rangers. Can they hang on to their key players? Do they need to sell their key players to keep them going financially to the end of the season? So that there's still kind of close scrutiny on that situation.
Ewan Murray, north of the border.
Can we talk a little bit about Italy? Because I see Di Natale has been called up for...
Well, yeah. Prandelli says he's going to call him up. And Di Natale's making all sorts of noises about what a great front pairing he's going to make with Balotelli.
Mm. 16-1 to be your 2012 champions, Italy.
What are the odds on you not mentioning odds during a podcast?
The other thing I was going to ask you, the guy that exposed the recent match fixing, he's been called up to do some training as
well. Yeah, he didn't expose it as such, except that he did the right thing by saying, what was his name, Farina. He said, yeah, they approached me, offered me, what was it, €200,000? Throw a game with Gubbio, Italian Cup match. So, yes. But his manager said we shouldn't make a hero of him. He just did what he was supposed to do, which I think is fair as well, you know?
But let's be honest, when it comes to Italy, not everyone does what they're supposed
to do. When it comes to any country anywhere, Sean Ingle.
I would argue that
Italy is worse. You're so defensive.
I'm not so defensive. He's just a racist. Yeah.
Surely that's more xenophobic than racist. Mm? I'll wear a t-shirt in support of you, Sean.
Well, the thing is, my Uncle Luigi wouldn't thank you for that.
Right, yeah, I know. Where you come from, it's a friendly town.
And what about Carlo Ancelotti off to PSG?
Yeah, bloody Italians. Oh, I see. Right, sorry. Well, that's a surprise, isn't it? Because we were told that wasn't going to happen, and yet it seems it will. And now the big story is the fact that with Leonardo there and Ancelotti, they might try and bring in little Alexander Pato, who's not happy and was making vague kind of grumblings about how he never gets the chance to talk properly with his manager Allegri at Milan, and so to talk about that. But equally, with the pitter-patter of little Pato's on the way, that does seem difficult, doesn't it?
You know, is Pato still stepping out with Silvio Berlusconi? Berlusconi's daughter, yes.
Baby Berlusconi's, that's what they say. I don't know. I mean, she's not going to go to Paris, is she? She's running the football club. It's a difficult one, isn't it, when you go out with a football player? You know, sooner or later it's going to end in tears.
I wouldn't know.
All right, just, yeah. Anyway, now, but that's that was the story. Milan today tweeting, he's not going anywhere. So, but with Tevez potentially arriving there, which I believe is still a likely deal, that will see his scope for playing time reduced significantly.
Edison Cavani won't return my calls. So
yeah, I know.
I don't know what it's like to go out with a football player.
Mm. Hey, could be worse. You could be Chris Whelpsdale of Gillingham, who had his scrotum split by a shocking tackle.
Ugh.
Did you not hear this story, Barry?
No.
Was you Christmas free of Chris Whelpdale's scrotum knack?
The sack knack. I'm still reeling from who's it ruptured their testicle.
Yes, Scott Dann.
Scott Dann.
Yeah, worse. Poor Chris Whelpdale. The injury occurred during a 2-1 win at Crawley. He's going to need 5 stitches in his testicles, it says. I presume in the actual scrotum, not the testicles itself. Although I don't know. Oh, God, everybody's...
why hasn't he had them yet? If he's going to need them, surely.
Well, this report might have been from before. I presume he's had them by now. Okay, that's all. Take a deep breath after that one. Yeah, but poor chap, and best wishes. You know, all joking aside, best wishes.
Who was the New Zealand rugby player who famously... played on with a torn scrotal area.
All right, can we move on?
Yes.
Yeah. It's pretty much the end of the pod, but we're just going to talk a couple of other things. I'm not sure we gave Newcastle enough of an airing and their chances of producing real upset at Anfield. Did we?
Well, I picked them up. I said there was no way I would be. Sorry, it's quite odds again. Back in Liverpool at 2-1 on, given the fact they've drawn against... the likes of Swansea, Sunderland, Blackburn and Norwich already.
Have they got all their players back this time, Newcastle? I mean, Chiote's back and Kabay is now back from his suspension. Yeah. Demba Ba hasn't gone yet.
And the other thing is, Newcastle's record, I think I might say, is exactly the same home and away. It's identical. So, I'm not saying they're going to win, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if they got at least the point.
That's how is Newcastle's defence these days? Are they were down to...
Stephen Taylor short of being full strength, I believe. Yeah?
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Wigan at Stoke then. Wigan at Stoke. Don't know why I mentioned that. Wigan at Stoke. There you go. What about QPR Arsenal, Michael?
Well, I'm just looking at
Arsenal QPR.
Looking at the form table of the Premier League, QPR are the only side not to have picked up a win in their last 6 games, so they could certainly do with a victory here. You wouldn't think that they'll get a win at Arsenal, but just a good result maybe could turn their season around going into the new year. Interestingly, or not, depending on whether you find this interesting, QPR didn't make a sub in their game against Swansea, which is quite surprising at this time of year with the games coming thick and fast.
That is surprising.
And you wonder whether they'll pay for it in fitness terms at the Emirates.
I've just remembered why I was mentioning Wigan Stoke, and it's because that features the Premier League's number one dribbler, Victor Moses. This is on page 5, coincidentally, Barry, of today's Guardian. There's the top 10 in all sorts of statistics. There's the most shots, best shot to goal conversion. We knew that was Yakubu, but Klasnić in second place. How about this? Most passes, Yaya Toure, comfortably the leader. They're going to miss him, aren't they? 1,401 passes. The next closest is Mikel Arteta, 1,254. But how about John Terry in ninth place there? He's one of the he's one of only 9 players to have passed more than 1,000 times so far this season, and he's actually got the second highest success rate. Does that mean something, Michael, or am I just getting jiggered by statistics?
I think Terry's always been quite good on the ball, actually. He moves forward from a left-sided position quite nicely. There was a game a couple of weeks ago when he sent a really good pass out to Sturridge on the far side, big long diagonal. So I think maybe a little bit like Tony Adams, you know, 10, 15 years ago, that area of his game is a little bit better than people often give him credit for.
Hmm. Fair enough.
What constitutes a dribble, by the way? Is it more than one pace?
I think you have to go past at least one player.
All right.
All right. Yeah, well, Victor Moses is the champ right now.
On the QPR Arsenal game, Joseph Barton is now a proud father.
Oh, is he?
Baby Cassius.
Cassius?
Cassius Barton.
Okay, very good. Well, congratulations to all concerned. Oh, yeah, here's a finger up from producer Ben.
Yeah, well,
he's either putting it up for Stoke Newington or that Wayne Shelford was the New Zealand player who had his ball bag quite literally stitched up and then played on.
Buck was his nickname.
Really?
Yep.
My word. Well, on that note, that's it for today's Football Weekly. Not really very extra, but we will be back refreshed and refueled in the new year. So that looks exciting. Hey, some big games on the way, as I think we mentioned. And Wigan Stoke.
What are your new year plans, Jimbo?
I'm going to Turkey, actually.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
On holiday? Or?
Well, yeah, kind of. Yeah, just for a day or two. And then, you know, coming back is also my plans.
Hopefully there'll be a manager sack so you can do that boss for us joke.
Yeah! That one.
who flies to Turkey, which is a four-hour trip there for just a day or two?
What kind of three or four.
I thought times were tough, but clearly not.
We're going to go and see some friends in Istanbul, New Year's Eve.
Great city.
Good. Anybody else?
Just going to be watching Jules Holland in a mate's house.
Oh, nice.
Jules
one.
Is hooting nanny.
He's going to be at your mate's house. No.
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry. Who's on this year? Is it?
I have no idea.
Yeah. All right. Michael?
Well, I was planning on doing that, but I was just interested who was going to be on.
Right.
So I can know whether to be excited or underwhelmed.
I could trump your Turkey. I'm going back to fights in Luton.
Are you?
Luton, yeah.
All right, cool. What do they do in Luton on New Year's Eve?
Fight.
Do they?
Pissed up. Smash people's heads in.
Is that just in your house or
Uncle Jimmy's not coming around, so
right.
There's a lot of that.
Right. Magnificent. All right. Well, then, that's it then for today's show. And I hope you have a terrific new year, everyone. We'll be back on, when is it, Thursday? Not until next Thursday. Controversially. So plenty of time to look forward to the next podcast. In the meantime, many thanks, Barry Glendinning. Nice to see you back. Will you be back next Thursday, out of interest? Will you continue this Berbatov fleeting dalliance with... He is back.
No, I think I'm pretty much in now for the rest of my life.
All right, excellent.
Ooh. However long that may be.
Hmm. All right, good. And Sean Ingle, many thanks to you. And Michael Cox, brilliant stuff. Thank you. Cheers, producer Ben. Nice to see you back. Have a terrific time, listeners. We'll speak to you next Thursday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.